Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. You can stream live with us or listen to podcasts of prior shows. That's all available on wdiy.org under local programming as well. Good evening. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, May 23rd, 2018. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 24,886, the NASDAQ at 74.25, and the S&P at 27.33. Our topic tonight is revisiting taxis and takeaways, or more appropriately, start with your 2018 planning now. That's your answer, John, wondering why are we talking about taxes? Maybe we need to look at our 2018 planning now. But we are going to talk about some takeaways from tax season as well as some other things that, you know, we tend to get a lot of questions about this time of year. So I'll go over some of those. We are live tonight. We can take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you could give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it into the studio, and I'll do my best to answer that. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments, and while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. Again, the number is 610-758-8810. And email is also available through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. Generally, that's kind of nice for a little bit more involved questions or if someone requires anonymity. So yourfinancialchoices.com. So what are we talking about? Revisiting tax season takeaways and a little bit talking about planning and tax reform and all of that. So a few things I think it's important to look at after tax season is what kind of issues did we have during tax season relating to maybe just tax preparation in general and what people are doing with their tax returns, what kind of issues are you experiencing, that if we talk about some of those items, then you could be in front of them for 2018 and perhaps save yourself some frustration, save yourself time in getting your information ready or organized, whether it's for self-preparation of your tax return, but especially if you're giving your tax information to a tax preparer to prepare your tax return, you want to be organized, you want to be efficient. So we're going to go through some of those things. I want to talk about W-2s, tax withholding. So we're going to touch on the W-4, which is the form you fill out to adjust your tax withholding with your employer. Talk about pay stubs. I'm going to talk about some changes that we're going to see for 2018 that we didn't have before. That's going to change what your filing looks like, perhaps. And then maybe a little bit of planning at the end if we can fit it in. So let me start by talking about some things that are coming up right now. For example, client emailed me today, had received a Form 5498. Lori, this looks like a tax document. Do you need it? And it was for 2017. The Form 5498 is simply an informational filing, basically. And what it is a report to the IRS from the custodian of your individual retirement accounts or Roth IRA accounts, so IRAs and Roth IRAs, IRA rollovers, traditional IRAs. It is an informational filing to the IRS letting them know what the December 31st year-end balance was of the account and if you had taken any distributions or made contributions to your account. And it's pretty much informational filing. So why am I getting this and what do I need to do with it? Well, as an informational filing, you can just tuck it away in your tax folder or your filing system. But if you take a look at it, it might give you some information that you might not have realized this form was also giving. And what might also be included on that 5498, depending on the custodian, would be not just the balance. It might tell you if you have a required minimum distribution, if you're subject to it. If you are age 70 and a half, it might say you're subject to a required minimum distribution. The funds that your account is invested in. Not every 5498 does that, and that would be just informational as well, because the IRS doesn't care what funds you are in, but certain 5498, certain custodians will report the funds that you might have your retirement account invested in. And what I am looking at in particular as well, just from the financial planning perspective, is some of the 5498s actually report beneficiary information. It will say primary beneficiary, sometimes even contingent beneficiaries. So for me, it's a great kind of informational piece of paper that I can look at and make sure that this is what we thought it was. If I see something that looks awry, I can notify the client, hey, you know, do you know that this showed your primary beneficiary, but it didn't show a contingent, or it was a primary or a contingent I wasn't expecting. So sometimes it's still worthwhile looking at those forms, even if it is just informational. It doesn't hurt to have the opportunity to look at some of that additional information when it's provided to you, so obviously. But as far as you as a taxpayer having to do anything with that Form 5498, you don't have to. It's informational only. Why are some people getting it now? Because the filing requirement for that from the custodian's perspective is, I don't know what the due date is, but I think it used to be like June or July. Some of the custodians will have those 5498s generated, you know, by tax time, by April. So we will typically get a lot of those when we're filing the tax returns. But some custodians don't issue those until later after tax season. So that's why you're getting them. And they're just for information only. Don't take a chance to look at it. And then you can just file that. Occasionally, people will put it in their tax file and I'll see it the next year. And that works as well. Another thing I wanted to mention is that quite often this time of year, we get a lot of tax notices, and some of those tax notices come so soon, you can't believe it's for the 2017 tax return. But what might happen is estimates might have been off. Maybe you said you made an estimate and you didn't, or you did make an estimate and you didn't think you did, or you didn't tell your tax preparer. Sometimes the withholdings might have been entered incorrectly. So right now we're getting a lot of those kind of very easy, low-level tax notices that are very simple. You know, a taxpayer made an extra estimate and didn't tell us, and the IRS is sending them a notice saying you have a bigger refund than what was reported. And generally, they'll show the differences of what that is. So you want to make sure you take some time to look at that. I want to talk a little bit more about tax notices, but we're coming up to our first radio show break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We are talking about revisiting tax season takeaways. And as we go through the show, I'm going to talk a little bit about 2018 tax reform and what you can expect as well. And why are we talking about it? Well, because right now we still have folks who might be getting little notices from the IRS about their tax returns, whether it's 2017 or the IRS just catching up to 2016 returns. We have some clients still getting tax documents in the mail, maybe corrected tax documents, Form 5498, as I mentioned before. That's just informational filing. So if you're getting questions about this, and I see questions about it, I thought it might be a good topic to talk about. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever is more convenient for you or whatever you're more comfortable with. So let's talk a little bit more about tax notices. So I mentioned you might get a little notice in the mail saying that the taxes paid were off or the tax refund is different than what was reported, but the IRS and even the states will send a notice and illustrate the changes. What is it that you reported and what is it that they're saying? So the Fed is much better at showing the differences in the reporting. Pennsylvania will just show here's what they've adjusted your return to. So they don't show the differences. You don't see your numbers. It'll just show what they've changed them to. And people sometimes take this as gospel and respond to the notice. If the notice says pay $5,000, they just think they have to and they pay it, whether it's Fed or state or whatever. And I have cautioned listeners regularly about not taking it for gospel, because you need to understand what they are describing as the change or what their records show compared to what you might have reported. Sometimes they will say, you know, that maybe you didn't make a payment, but you have a canceled check to show that you did make the payment. So you can't always assume that they are correct. If they say you didn't make a payment and you're sure you did, then you need to find a copy of, you know, the canceled check to provide them, and then you respond to the notice. I just was talking with a colleague today, so this was perfect timing. He had someone who got a notice and paid the tax due based on what the IRS said. And I've had this situation before, and this is the reason I talk about this regularly, is taxpayers get those notices and pay them. And in this situation that my colleague was talking to me about today was the exact same situation I had many, many, many years ago that really taught me to be very careful with tax notices, is when a client pays the tax due that the notice says without understanding the underlying changes, and then you find out that the underlying changes were based on information that the IRS had, based on maybe how the tax return was filed, but not realizing that the taxpayer actually probably didn't provide all the information that was needed or available. So the situation that I heard about today was that the IRS had information that the client had, or the taxpayer had, sold securities. They get a tax document from the custodian. It's called the 1099-B as in boy, and it reflects that they sold, and I'm going to make this up, $10,000 of some mutual fund. And they forgot to report it. So the IRS sends a notice saying, hey, you had $10,000 that you didn't report. You owe $1,500 in tax. Maybe the tax rate was 15% for this person. You owe $1,500 in tax on this $10,000 mutual fund you sold. And the taxpayer just missed the 1099. They, you know, forgot they had it, whatever the case was. I don't know why they didn't report it. But the truth was, yes, they sold the $10,000 mutual fund, but the IRS, because the taxpayer had not reported it, assumed the cost basis was zero and assessed the tax on the full $10,000 gain, when in fact there was cost basis. And if in this example, $10,000 of proceeds, $10,000 of cost basis, there wouldn't have been any gain at all in the taxpayer wouldn't have owed the tax. So in this situation, the taxpayer was a self-prepared kind of person. They prepared the return. They got the notice. They paid the tax. Happened to mention it to my colleague. My colleague dug a little bit deeper and found that this was that exact situation, is amending the tax return and then showing on the amended tax return the true cost basis as, you know, as they can prove, and then taking credit for that extra tax that the gentleman paid and filing amended return for the refund. So watch out with tax notices. Try to make sure you understand them and pay attention to the differences. Sometimes the IRS is absolutely right, and other times it could just be they're absolutely wrong. And other times it could be somewhere in between, that it's a little bit of a mix of both things. Yes, IRS, I forgot to report that sale. But number two, I do have cost basis in that. So that's one of those kind of mixed ones. So lots of tax notices that typically come out this time of year simply because the IRS has that matching program and tax reporting information that they finally get downloaded into their system that comes from your employers, your custodians, your pension people, all gets culminated into their system, and now they get to do the matching this time of year, and that's why you're seeing some notices more than usual. So pay attention to that. These are some of the things we want you to watch out for, take away what we've learned from tax season, and the after effects of tax season as well. So back to that point about someone not reporting a sale of a brokerage account, a mutual fund, a stock, or whatever. So in that situation, what I have seen is sometimes people think, well, I had a loss. What difference does it make? Well, the IRS only gets reported typically the gross proceeds from many, many moons back. The proceeds are reported. In more recent years, the rules have changed such that custodians, when you buy a mutual fund or a stock, the cost basis is required to be tracked. So a lot of people start to think, oh, my cost basis is being tracked, and the IRS knows what my cost basis is. So, you know, why is there this mix-up? Or they think, well, I get my brokerage statements, and it's on my brokerage statements, the cost basis, so therefore, you know, everybody knows it's going to get reported to the IRS. But that's not always the truth, because basis pre, let's say 2012, for the most part, was not required to be reported to the IRS and does not have to be reported to the IRS moving forward on positions that were acquired pre-2012. And it varied between mutual funds and stock, and I don't remember which year was they phased it in over a couple of years. So if you are thinking that the brokerage firm is going to report that cost basis to the IRS for those long-term positions that are pre-2012, and you think it's on my 1099, it's on my statement, maybe you import that information into your tax return, the cost basis might not be there, folks. So that's why if you have a notice, don't assume that they have the cost basis. But more importantly, are you even looking at those 1099s when you are inputting that information or attaching it to your tax return? So I'm going to explain that a little bit clearer when we come back from this next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about some takeaways from tax season and some items to watch out for over the next few months when we're getting notices from the IRS and or tax filing documents. And especially as we go through the show in the later half, I'm going to talk about 2018 and some things to watch out for. W-4 withholdings, you know, filling out your W-4 for your W-2 confuses people. But I want to finish up a little bit on the 1099. And this is where I could see some people could have a problem because we get so used to, a certain way of doing things. And years ago, as I mentioned, pre-2012, cost basis was not reported to the IRS. So we all knew that we had to track it, keep track of it, and let our accountants know about it. 2012 moving forward, for the most part, anything that we're buying, the custodian is keeping track of that cost basis for you. Not only are they keeping track of the cost basis for you, if you transfer your account to another broker or another custodian, they have to also transfer the cost basis information to the new custodian. All right. Over time, we become very used to that. Right. So when we become very used to now, in the old days, I had to track it and be very careful and pay attention to it and make sure my accountant had it. Now going forward, you know, now we're in 2018. All of a sudden, we're not paying attention the way we used to. And the we're just expecting the cost basis to be there on those statements. We also appreciate that some of the software today lets us import the information from the custodian. The IRS lets us do attachments so we can just summarize and put the total of our sales and the total of our cost basis and say, see attached. So all of a sudden, all these conveniences have made us kind of lose brain cells in what we need to pay attention to and the details we have to pay attention to. So my fear is, and I have seen it, is sometimes the attachments of the sales transactions on those mutual funds and stocks that the custodians provide to us don't always have the full cost basis on some of those older positions. Number one, they're not required to report it to the IRS, but they might give it to you in supplementary pages. So now you have these supplementary pages and you kind of get mixed up in your head whether it's really required to be filed to the IRS or not. But regardless, you have to attach cost basis to your tax return, whether you enter each transaction or you attach this statement from your broker. But you forget those long-term positions pre-2012 might not have all the cost basis. And instead, you're just putting the summary information, you glance at them, you'd miss it, and you could be losing out on entering cost basis on the on your tax return on those sales. So don't miss that. You want to look at the document. So many people rely totally on the tax preparer, you know, which is fine, and you hope they catch it. But if it's your tax return, why not have an extra set of eyes on it and notice if there's missing cost basis? You can say, hey, there's some missing cost basis there. Let me see what I can find in my records, and we can get the proper cost basis included with that. I had a call come in off air from Omar and in Whitehall, and he asked, buying a house and a down payment is a gift from a relative. What are the tax implications? Omar, that is a very good question. And from time to time, I've actually seen settlement sheets when someone has gone to settlement where it actually shows on the settlement sheet that some of the money toward the purchase is a gift. But generally there probably wouldn't be any kind of tax implications to, I don't know if you're the one getting the gift, you're getting the gift from the relative. If they make a gift to you, what happens, I know, when you're going to settle is you have to disclose whether you're getting a gift, because when you're going to get financing, you have to say that some of the money might be coming from someone else. So that's one thing. And generally, the mortgage people will catch that because they want to see, you know, bank statements and activity and pay stubs and all of that. And so a lot of times they can see from one bank statement to the bank statement when you go to settlement. I know I just recently purchased a second home, and they wanted to see the bank statement from when we first went to get financing to settlement. So they want to see what has changed in your bank account. So you probably do need to disclose that, but that's not tax implications. That's more like financing implications. When someone makes a gift in 2018, the annual exclusion, which I'll define a little bit more in a minute, is $15,000. So I could make a gift to you, Omar, of $15,000, and neither you nor I have to report anything. I just give you a gift of $15,000. We're good to go. My husband could give a gift to you too. I could give a gift to you, your spouse, your children. It's unlimited. I could do $15,000 gifts, annual exemption to any number of people, and there's nothing to report for either of us. And I'm talking like cash gifts, right? So there's nothing for either of us to do. If someone makes a gift to you of more than $15,000, technically they have to file a gift tax return to report that they gave you a gift of more than the annual exclusion. So what does that mean to file a gift tax return? Well, a gift tax return, so then you might think, oh, I have gift tax. Well, not exactly, because there is a lifetime exemption for gift tax of now, in 2018, $11,200,000. So Omar, as long as no one's giving you $11,200,000, there's not a gift tax return, a gift tax due. So the gift tax only comes into play when someone has exhausted their lifetime exemption. That's why people have to file annual gift tax returns if they give more than $15,000, because they have to let the IRS know that they're eating into that lifetime exemption. So that's why I say technically. I think that the IRS should come up with some kind of a threshold a little higher than the $15,000 these days. But that is what the rules are. If it's more than $15,000, you have to let the IRS know you're eating into your exemption. The way people work around that is by doing spousal gifts, splitting gifts, gift to children, that kind of thing. You can kind of spread around a lot of money without having to do a gift tax return. So I hope that helped. Long explanation, but I just wanted to make sure that you understood different implications. The reason I said cash and that doesn't have tax implications is because, Omar, if someone were to gift you $15,000 of appreciated securities, yes, that wouldn't have to be reported because it's under the annual, you know, $15,000, the annual amount we can do without having to report a gift tax return. But if someone gave you appreciated security and then you sold it, yes, you might have some tax implications because you would have the cost basis of that person who gave it to you. So if I gave you $15,000 of ABC stock and I paid a dollar for it and now I've given it to you, yes, I've made a gift of $15,000. You don't have to report anything right now. I don't have to report anything right now. But if you sell the $15,000 of stock and I had a cost basis of $1, you now have a cost basis of $1. If you sell it, then you would have an income tax implication. So I'm talking general, and I was talking cash because that's generally what you're getting when you buy a house. So, you know, the issue with radio folks is this is a general education awareness type of format, because I cannot cover all of the nuances and trajectories that some of the things that we talk about go. And I am always fearful that someone will take what we say in this context and run with it. So as we mentioned at the top of the show, you know, consult your tax advisor or attorney when you're specific to your own situation. But I think that was fairly easy, Omar. best wishes with the house. Congratulations. Folks, we're at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
The time is 6:30, and you're listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert. Lori, did you enjoy today's weather in the Lehigh Valley?
I was working all day, John. I didn't even notice it. It's so sad.
What a beautiful day it was. We currently have 79 degrees still at this hour. Tonight, 55. Tomorrow, Thursday, sunny and 80. Is that too warm for you?
No, it's beautiful.
That's okay. See, she's from Michigan, so I'm going to ask her something about that in just a minute. Thursday night, 54. Friday, sunny, 82. Still okay? Mm-hmm. Well, she says yes. Friday night, 62. Now, Saturday, we have a chance of precipitation. Of course, that's what we've been doing in the past few Saturdays and Sundays, huh? As soon as the weekend hits, we get precipitation. Saturday, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m., mostly sunny, 87. That's a high temperature day. And Saturday night, again, a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, 68 degrees. Lori, what's fun for me is working alongside a fellow Midwesterner.
Yep.
And so I'm from Illinois. You're from Michigan.
Yep.
Now, my question is this. You have two peninsulas in Michigan.
Yep.
You know the names of both.
Yep.
The folks who live in the Upper Peninsula, they call it the UP.
Right.
Correct? Those who live in the lower, is it LP?
We don't say that, no. The mitten. You live in the mitten, then.
You live in the mitten.
Yeah, we don't say the LP. Now, the people in the UP might say the LP, but the people in the Lower Peninsula do not say LP. So, yeah, love being from Michigan.
So here's Lori Siebert, and we continue with Your Financial Choices.
Thank you, John. And it is true, us Midwesterners love Midwesterners. We are talking about some tax takeaways, folks, and I realize I've talked a bit about tax notices, 1099-Bs, the Form 5498. Let me see if I can run through a couple other things quickly so that I can talk about some 2018 planning and review that I want listeners to pay attention to so that our well-informed listeners are ahead of the game. I called our listeners sophisticated listeners the other day when someone asked, what kind of audience do we have? And I said, sophisticated listeners, so informed listeners as well. Another item to point out is for people who have after-tax dollars in their IRA, that means possibly pre-1986, you might have put in some after-tax monies because maybe there wasn't a pre-tax option for you at that time. After tax monies, meaning you put money in a retirement account, you didn't get a deduction for it. Therefore, you have a basis in it. And when you take it out, that basis wouldn't be taxed. Unfortunately, if you have after tax money in retirement accounts and you roll it over to an IRA and you didn't take it out at that time, it now becomes basis in your IRA and it will only come out pro rata tax free. And you track that after tax basis or dollars in the IRA using a form 8606. So I just like people to not lose track of that. It is valuable. It's going to save you some tax on that after-tax amount when you're taking it out pro rata. Another reason we use form 8606 is to track basis in Roth IRAs. The 8606 is not required to be filed if you're not, taking money out of the IRA and applying the after-tax amount. So over the years, you're not RMD, you're not required minimum distribution age, you might want to have that after-tax basis in your Form 8606, but it doesn't necessarily have to be filed with the IRS. You could do Roth contributions, which you can track on the Form 8606, but again, you don't have to file it with the IRS. When does that become really handy? It becomes handy as if you take money out of the Roth IRA when you're pre-retirement age and or before you've had it in there 5 years, and you're just taking out some of the original contribution, that's when you want to make sure you have that 8606, because you have to prove to the IRS that you're only taking out your original contributions. If you take out your original contributions, there's no tax on that. So you want to make sure that if you have any of those situations, you're tracking that. And again, that's the form 8606. Keep that in mind going forward. We also have, I talked about the after-tax cost basis, organize your papers. Let's talk a minute about your W-2s. W-2s tell you a lot of information. So if you rarely look at your W-2, now's the time. You can pull out your W-2 from 2017 and look at it. Look at all those codes. There's some really valuable information on there. And if you kept your original paperwork, there will be additional information that tell you what the codes mean, because you're not going to know just looking at it. There's going to be a code AA, a code C, maybe a code D, a code DD, maybe a code E, maybe a code W. So there's all these codes on the W-2 that give you a lot of information and give tax preparers and or planners a lot of information. So you'd want to have that handy when you're doing planning or looking at your tax return. Typically what I'm seeing when I'm looking at a W-2, and this is after the fact, right? Because the W-2 comes after the tax year ends. So generally we can't do anything about the prior tax year, but I certainly can look at it to give people information of what they can do for the next tax year. So for example, had clients who made together, husband and wife, $250,000. I look on the W-2 and I see code AA, which means the gentleman, the husband in this case, was putting money into a Roth 401k. So through his employer plan, the employer provided 401k option. He was putting money into the Roth feature of that. We said, hey, dude, love the Roth, as everyone knows, I love the Roth IRA, but not when you're in a high tax bracket. And when you're in a high tax bracket, I'd rather have the pre-tax option, the regular 401k contribution, because as that builds up, that's working for you and it's saving you taxes. It's not costing you as much money. And then when you retire, we can always look at plan tax brackets and converting some of that money to Roth IRA if you end up being in a lower tax bracket. Okay, so those are the kinds of things we're looking for on the W-2. There's a few others, but I have a call from, this is off air. We had a call from Joe in Allentown, and he wants to be clear. If last year, 2017, someone gave $50,000 as a gift toward a purchase of a house, would that be tax exempt as a gift? Right, Joe. If someone gave you $50,000, let's say you're married, and it's you and your wife, and maybe it was mom and dad who gave you and wife $50,000 toward the purchase of a house, and it's just cash. So mom, in 2017, the annual exemption was $14,000. So mom could give $14,000 to you, Joe. Dad could give $14,000 to you, Joe. They together could give you $28,000. No one has to report any income tax or anything. Now, you said $50,000. So now, Joe, let's say you have a spouse. Your dad could give your spouse $14,000 and your mom could give your spouse $14,000. That's another $28,000. Your mom and dad could give you and your spouse $28,000 plus $28,000, $56,000. They only gave you $50,000, Joe. I'd ask for more money. No, they gave you $50,000. They're under the filing requirements for a gift tax return. They can give you $56,000 in my little story here. They don't have to report it on a gift tax return. You don't have to report it. That's it. It's especially in this case, it's cash for the purchase of a down payment on a house. Now that is separate from what I was talking about with Omar earlier, which is, it doesn't mean you don't have to disclose it when you go to buy a house that you're getting a gift. Generally, they ask those questions, and they are simply asking those questions for financing purposes. Okay, there's a difference. So no, it's not that it's tax exempt. It's just not taxable. All right. So I hope that makes sense. Good questions. And, you know, great ideas for those mom and dads who have extra money out there and can help throw some at your kids when they're buying houses. I love that. Help the family. Pass it on. Generally, folks, you know, I'm being funny. It's all worth doing some good planning for. Anyway, but that does remove it also. It is kind of an estate planning technique as well, though, now that I've gone down that route. When mom and dad transfer that money to kids or to whomever, that comes out of their estate. And again, when we're talking about federal estate tax purposes, the exemption's off the chart now, so there's not too many people who even have a federal estate tax. But for Pennsylvania residents, it still can make a difference. It could save 4.5% if your parents have transferred that money to you and they survive a year, it's out of their estate as well. So it's all part of estate planning as well. So let me talk about those W-2s. So look for the codes. Pay stubs. I especially wanted to talk about pay stubs for a minute because I think they're going to become more important, and especially for those folks in New Jersey. So I know we have New Jersey listeners. You want to review your pay stubs, and the reason is, unlike so many other states in the country, a lot of the states will follow the federal, and if you're contributing to your medical cost, your health care, through your employer. So if I'm putting money toward my employer provides some of the benefit for healthcare, and then I have to pay, I'm making this up, $500 a month. Well, for Pennsylvania, that's not taxable to us. It's just not taxable. It's not taxable for Medicare. It's not taxable for federal. It's not taxable for PA. New Jersey, if the employee is paying some of their medical, not the employer piece, I believe, but the employee piece, it is included for New Jersey wages. It's not tax exempt. And that's because New Jersey gives their residents a medical deduction on page one. So those medical costs that are coming out of your paycheck aren't, they are included in your New Jersey income. So you have to remember to grab those numbers off that pay stub and put it in as a medical deduction on your New Jersey return. Now, for some people, it may not be worth it to them because if you make so much money, there's limitations in New Jersey as to what medical deduction you can take. I think it's limited to 2% of your taxable income. So if your taxable income is $300,000 times 2%, well, you might not have, you know, $6,000 of out-of-pocket medical. So you want to review that and be aware of it. So that could be that medical, flexible spending accounts, dental and vision. So you want to watch those pay stubs. In fact, I think we're going to start actually asking for pay stubs because there's also other information on those pay stubs, things like union dues, which might be deductible for Pennsylvania. For federal, those aren't going to be deductions anymore because we don't have miscellaneous itemized deductions. So we want to look at the pay stubs and see what's going on and see how people are, you know, what the details are behind their payroll and what they're paying for. Sometimes you see on the pay stub that you're paying for life insurance or, you know, accidental and death life insurance or flexible spending accounts. Are you making sure you're submitting your expenses for reimbursement on that? So lots of information on the W-2. So part of reflecting back on tax season is understanding the importance of all these papers and documents. As far as 2018, here's my caution about 2018, because we're coming up in the last quarter of the show. I haven't even talked about 2018 yet. With tax reform, as many of you know, there's been some drastic changes. A lot of people who used to itemize their deductions because their itemized deductions on Schedule A were higher than their standard deduction are no longer going to itemize because with tax reform, there are several line items that were eliminated as deductions on Schedule A. Therefore, more people are going to use the standard deduction. So we're going to talk about the impact of that And I want to talk about the impact of what your taxes are going to look like for 2018 and why you need to revisit that sooner than later when we do the last quarter of the show here. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're going to take the last quarter of the hour to talk about 2018 and tax reform and some big takeaways. Here are the big takeaways. Folks, if you work and you have an employer and you have not completed a new W-4 form, it's not too late. You might want to look at that. I know my employer, I think, sent something out. Of course, I ignored it and didn't do anything, so I better jump on that. But before I get into that, I do have a call on line one. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg. Hi,
hello.
Carolyn. Hi, how are you? Carolyn, can you hear me?
Hello.
Hi. Carolyn, can you hear me? Okay. Carolyn? Oops. Okay. Can you take that off, John? Carolyn had looked like she had a question. She had said something about someone lost a job and used all their 401k savings. So sorry, Carolyn, we lost you there. But let me guess at what you might have been talking about. So if someone lost a job and then they had to tap their 401k, if they are age 59 and a half or older and had to take money out of their 401k, they still would be subject to income tax, but they would not have a 10% penalty for having to use their 401k. If they terminated employment at age 55 and had to take money out of the 401k, that's an exception to the 10% penalty. So if they lost their job at 55, had to use their 401k for their cash flow and expenses, while they still might have income tax on those distributions from the 401k, that is an exception to the 10% penalty. The caution here is sometimes people will roll over their 401k into an IRA when they've had an event like this and think that they can take the money out of the IRA with that same exception to the 10% penalty. That does not apply to IRAs. The age 55 exception only applies to people who are 55 by December 31st of the year of termination and take money out of the 401k. They can avoid the 10% penalty on the early distribution. There is something called like a hardship distribution, but that's while you're still employed, I believe, not after termination. And so, you know, I'm not sure if that's where you were going. If there would be, if someone's 40 years old, they lose their job and they take all their money out of the 401k, they've got tax and possibly a 10% penalty unless they can find some other exception, which revolves around death, disability, medical, if your medical exceeds the AGI, you know, kind of limitation. So there are a few other exceptions, but best wishes to that poor person who lost their job. And I hope that answered your question. And again, I'm sorry that we missed you there. As far as the W-4, If folks need to review your withholding, and why do you need to review your withholding? Because the tax rates have changed. So sometimes people will think they might have had enough withheld based on the prior year without realizing that the withholding tables changed. So even if you didn't complete a W-4 form and you think, well, I just want to keep my withholding the same as it was in the prior year, the withholding is not going to be the same as it was in the prior year because the withholding tables changed. So you want to complete a W-4. The hiccups with the W-4 is sometimes people will think, oh, the W-4, I go in, I did the W-4, I completed it, and they're only looking at their own income in a bubble, and they forget, oops, I'm married to someone who's making $500,000 a year. So if I'm making $50,000 and, you know, as a married filing joint, $50,000, my withholdings might be virtually like barely anything. But hey, if I'm married to someone who's making $500,000, then my withholding should be more like 40%. You've got to capture that and calculate that and figure that out. And I think that's where a lot of times people will mess this up because they forget when they combine their income, they end up being in a higher tax bracket. So husbands and wives, partners who are filing joint tax returns, you want to make sure that you're working together and working with each other in reviewing your withholding. Sometimes I'll too see where there will be couples who really keep their stuff separate. And one will have really, really low withholdings and their income's all going into one bank account and they're spending to their heart's desire. And the other couple, the other member of the couple is, you know, worried about taxes. They're thrifty and they have high withholdings on their pay, and their money goes into their bank account and there's hardly any left because they have such high withholdings and they're careful with their spending. And then when I see the tax return, the tax rates are high, and it's really because one person isn't carrying the load. So you want to go through the W-4. When you go to do this, there's a couple options for you. You can go on the IRS's website, irs.gov, and search for the W-4, and it gives you the W-4 Employees Withholding Allowance Certificate, and they also give you the worksheets. But there's another option here, which is a calculator at also irs.gov/W-4 app. irs.gov/W-4 app. That you can run through your scenario, husband, wife, single, married, filing joint, one job, two jobs. But it did look like it was a little more complicated than what you might be led to believe. You want to have those pay stubs out and ready. That's another reason to have those pay stubs. And when they're available online, nobody ever looks at them. You want to go online, download your pay stub, get it so that if you do use this feature on the IRS's website, you have the numbers ready to input, because what they're going to ask you is, what is your income? What is the withholding year to date? And what is the withholding for your most current pay period, is what it looked like to me. Then you can also include if you have additional income, like interest and dividends, and it can help you calculate what your withholdings will be based on all of the income, not just your W-2 payroll. And that's where sometimes people miss out. The other issue that I would see is that we had the old withholding tables January, February, I believe, and the new withholding tables March through the end of the year. So if people were using their January or February pay stubs to project what their withholdings were going to be for the year, maybe when they were doing their 2017 tax return, you might not be using the right numbers. That's why you have to look at the current pay stub to see how the withholdings changed for the ongoing tax period. So again, that W-4 Employees Withholding Allowance Certificate. Another note on that is, so often people thought this was the exemption. So if you were married filing joint and had two kids, people would go to work and they'd tell their employer, oh, W-4, married filing joint, four exemptions. They would say four because I have myself, my spouse, and my two kids. Well, it's a withholding allowance certificate. It's no longer about how many exemptions you have. It's about how many allowances you have. Why would we have allowances? Well, that goes into the calculation of how much withholdings you should have based on either tax credits that will be available to you because you have dependent children, because we don't get exemptions anymore. So the allowances are kind of like a factor used in calculating the withholdings based on not just the income, but what other kinds of tax credits you might get, like child tax credits, and or what kind of itemized deductions you might have. So some people, let me move on to itemizing. So some people will still itemize. Where we're seeing so many people not be able to itemize anymore were people who might have had high state and local and real estate tax deductions or high miscellaneous itemized deductions. There's a cap on the tax deduction now, and they've eliminated the miscellaneous itemized deductions. Tax prep fees, asset management fees, safe deposit box fees, your professional publications, that's all been eliminated. So the big deductions still available are your charitable contributions and your mortgage interest. So people who have a lot of mortgage interest and or charitable contributions might still benefit, but the standard deduction has gone so high that it's a higher hurdle to get over. But before, we could itemize and get the exemptions. Now the exemptions are gone, so even though we have this higher standard deduction and we might still be able to itemize, we're still not getting the same deductions we might have in the past. So that's another reason why you want to revisit the withholdings. Now, there is a bit of a wash for some people that even though we no longer have the exemptions, the tax brackets expanded and the tax rates came down. So some people will benefit for tax savings, but there is going to be a lot of people who won't. And you want to look at that tax return from last year. I know we're only at the end of May here. Why are we doing it now? Because you want to look at that tax return. You want to see if you're one of those people that are no longer going to benefit from, you know, the exemptions or benefit from itemizing the same way you used to, that if you're going to owe a lot more in taxes, if you were someone who had high tax deductions or high miscellaneous deductions and you're not going to benefit, you want to revisit your withholdings because there's a chance your taxes are going to go up. I was going to talk about the standard deduction for married filing joint, by the way, is $24,000. It used to be $13,000. And if you're over 65, you get some little extra amounts. So it's an extra $1,300 per person. So if you're married, it's $26,600. That's a pretty big deduction. The exemptions are gone, but that standard deduction may be over what you used to use for itemizing. I wrote an article on charitable giving that there are still a lot of ways to get tax benefits for charitable giving, even if you're not going to itemize. And for many people, they are not charitably inclined for the tax savings. But from my perspective, it was always a good incentive and a nice little perk for your charitable giving. So for people who are no longer going to itemize, you have to be aware that we don't want our nonprofits who rely on our gifts to, you know, be burdened with, you know, lower amounts contributing. So there are still a lot of other ways to give charitably where you still can get benefits. I'll have to do another show on that another time because I'm out of time. I hope I highlighted a few things that people are running into this time of year and what you need to be aware of. And please do your planning ahead of time, looking at those W-2s, looking at your withholdings, looking at your 401k contributions. That's another thing. If you're saving taxes, more money in your pocket, you could put more money in your 401k maybe. Those are the kinds of things you want to look at. Next week, we are going to talk about life's big events and how to plan and budget for them. What do I mean by life's big events? It might be a wedding. It could be travel. It could be new cars. we want to make sure that people have planned ahead of time. You're being proactive. You're not making impulsive decisions, pulling money out of retirement accounts or pulling money out of the wrong account when you're planning for big events. And also maybe a little bit about how to budget for them and how to make sure that you're ready for them when you have them, including having an emergency reserve. So thanks, callers, tonight. I really appreciate the calls. Enjoy the lovely evening. Thank you, Lori, for being here. Thank you, John Pierce, for being here. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.